This is session number 36 with Bob and Carolyn, recorded on May 11th, 2009, starting at 3:56 p.m. Hawaii time. Greetings, Ion.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Good evening, Ion. Can you have JW's voice be closer to his phone?
Oh, yes, and let me make sure that he's got it cranked up. Just a second, he'll know. Oh, no, that was all the way. Is that better?
Yeah, I think it's better. I think so.
Okay. Good.
Okay, I'm going to start off today with our medical dictionary, I guess you'd say, where we take a condition and make an ionic statement about it and then describe it in ionic terms. Does that suit your preferences?
Of course, it's your wanting. Mm-hmm. Now, do you want this as hit and runs, or do you want this as fully developed?
I'd like fully developed, and I'll give you the condition we're going out alphabetically.
Perfect.
Okay. And today we're starting with bronchitis. Can you tell me what the ionic statement for that is?
It's a constriction of the cilia in the bronchial tract.
Mm-hmm.
And now you want what that is.
Yeah, well, yes, that could describe it medically, actually.
Okay, it's a constriction of the flow of your circulation.
Mm-hmm. Blood circulation or air circulation?
Well, you can't, one is for a reason for the other.
Uh-huh, okay.
So, that disconnect could apply to circulatory.
Yeah.
That disconnection could also apply to the blood.
Yeah, okay.
To the oxygenation of the blood.
Okay.
And when that constricts or makes a constricted position, or when you push against it,
mm-hmm.
that's when that becomes the problem symptom.
So it's someone having a disconnection which causes a constriction?
I'm sorry, say that one more time.
Would that be then when someone has a disconnection that manifests as a constriction?
Not a disconnection, a constriction.
And what causes the constriction?
In little kids, it's when they don't want to go outside and play.
Mm-hmm.
And they're pushed to go out inside and do something that they don't like to do.
Mm-hmm.
Like, let's say, an athletic event that
mm-hmm.
they don't care for.
Mm-hmm.
Then they'll have a bronchial spasm.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next thing you know, then they got to be on the albuterol
mm-hmm.
to help soothe it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, so now they become in a less connected state.
Mm-hmm.
So now they don't have to get forced to do that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Runners who don't like to run,
mm-hmm.
that are forced to do that kind of thing, that would be they would have a not a disconnection, but a isolation that would not impede their life, but
mm-hmm.
make them not have to do that thing they don't want to do.
Mm-hmm.
You see?
Yeah.
And it's sometimes triggered when the heart rate gets over 158.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because that racing or that little bit of tachycardia, then that's set into place of an overload. So the bronchial cilia becomes the breaker,
mm-hmm.
like an electricity, that shuts it down.
Oh, mm-hmm.
It's an excuse. It's a reason to not have to compete.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. And older ones, when they get bronchitis, like, some of what you're saying sounds like asthma. Are you talking about bronchitis or asthma?
Bronchitis.
And
that becomes an infection.
Mm-hmm.
Asthma is just a disconnection from a spasm.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That you think that your oxygen is high when it's not, and so those clothes,
mm-hmm.
they seize.
Mm-hmm.
That's another aspect. But chronic bronchitis comes from folks that when it gets cold and they don't want to be cold and go outside, they develop chronic bronchitis so they don't have to go outside all winter long. They don't want to get the pneumonia.
Mm-hmm.
See? But they have vaccinations for pneumonia.
Mm-hmm.
So they just call it bronchitis.
Mm-hmm. What was that? Vaccinations cause bronchitis?
They used to be the fear or the disconnect was pneumonia.
Yes, yeah.
Well, they give vaccinations for pneumonia now,
mm-hmm.
so they just call it chronic bronchitis.
Mm-hmm.
Same deal. If those cilia seize, then they get wet, and when they get wet, then they start getting the crackles. And when you start getting the crackles, that's what you call bronchitis if it's not infected.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they had to drain the fluid.
They call bronchitis if it's not infected. We said earlier that bronchitis was infected.
One is an infection and one is affected.
Mm-hmm.
It's not an infection, it's an affection.
So bronchitis is an infection and asthma is an affection.
Correct.
Okay.
And now those overlap a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Because most asthmatics have a tendency to a bronchial spasm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That is not asthma.
Mm-hmm.
But see, they're all laying on top of each other, so, you know.
Mm-hmm.
See, what's the difference mm-hmm. between arthritis and a knee replacement?
Mm-hmm.
There is some difference, but most time they have a little of both, you see.
Yeah, gotcha. Okay, good. Okay, anything more to add before I go on?
No, we're good. Give you as you want.
Got it. Yeah, yes.
That was y'all. Okay, good.
Yeah, it was me.
Good.
When people get bruising, I'm thinking of in the elderly when they start getting black and blue all over.
Mm-hmm.
What's the disconnect there?
Thin skinned.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
No. Thin skin. You don't have to be old to have that.
Yes, I see.
They get to the point where they've had more contrasting in their life and someone would have an emotional status of being thick-skinned.
Yeah.
As they age, they start dropping those capillary resistances.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we're not talking about liver spots. We're talking about when they thin skin so that those capillaries just open up.
Mm.
It's the same thing that happened to Jesus, your Jesus, when he sweated blood.
Mm.
You can sweat blood the same way.
Mm.
And that's either come from age or from a super, super stressed position of releasing those sealed capillaries just below the dermis.
Hmm. So people who have the stigmata, they can just bleed, they can sweat blood?
Sure.
Hmm.
Sure, that's a great deal of how they, one of your causal symptomatics of the pretty non-lymphoma Hodgkin's and leukemia.
Okay, explain that.
They are more prone to that place as well, through the chest area, where they'll have the little beads of sweat, which are really blood.
Hmm.
You see?
Mm-hmm.
The whites are so high that the reds release.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Or the whites get wiped out, and there's no immune resistance to it, so the reds overflow.
Mm-hmm.
You see, so it's both two conversations, like most things.
Right. Come in and go.
And that happens to folks that get into a place of powerlessness.
Okay.
Most every time.
Okay.
So that would be your unconnected place.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Thin-skinned and powerless to do anything about it.
Well, no, powerless to do anything, and then that's the symptom.
Uh-huh. Okay.
They get powerless, and then they get the issue.
Mm-hmm.
Feeble. The two folks get feeble.
Mm-hmm.
Old people that aren't feeble don't don't have that skin breakdown.
Right? Yeah, I think so.
Well, it's the feeble ones.
Okay.
And that's where that onset of your bed sores come from as well.
Okay, very good. A condition called burning feet.
Yes, as in neuropathy?
Yes, exactly, as in neuropathy.
Oh, okay, fun. We can play with that. Neuropathy is the it's a superconductivity from a lack of ability to promote flow of circulation. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
There's more. Okay, now, when you say burning, is that like in the numb, tingly, like you lay on your foot and cut off the circulation so your leg's asleep? And then you get up and walk and you have the pins and needles burning
as
well?
Yes, this would be people who diabetic, burning feet, or even chronic fatigue.
Well, that's just circulation, and that disconnection is they are cutting off their ability to enjoy tactility. See, if you don't enjoy being tactile, guess what? You become sedentary. And the first example that shows up in, every single one of your humans who have that chronically have no hair on the top of their feet, on their toes. Those follicles don't get fed, so therefore, hair doesn't grow.
Correct, yeah.
So that's how you tell. Now, you got three things going on there. You got sugar diabetes, which is the same type of issue that comes into it. You have then the lack of circulation or the decreased circulation of the right type of circulation. Some of those people also, if they have a very rich man's diet, then that catches them and they have too much uric acid and they won't move. And that's also called gout, which is also a burning.
Yes, that's true.
And so it can show itself up in various degrees of disconnection. And we don't want to make this everything about disconnection because it's not that way. But it can lead up to, you see, that's why they call it the practice of medicine, because it's from where they start off in different places. They can land and it could show up as a causal symptom before it becomes critical or chop it off or gangrene or blah, 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 blah. You see, each level, you got to start it wherever you start, and then the symptoms show up, and then you got to figure out the disconnection from that point. So these blanket statements have to be on the sliding scale of where they start.
Correct, yeah.
Just to be fair. And see, those are just four or five different little things that show up that don't necessarily, you can have gout without having sugar. You can have decreased flow of circulation without having gout.
Very good.
So,
okay.
That one's not an end-all, cause-all.
Yeah, that's a good one. Burning mouth.
As in like a stinging or breakdown of an inflamed, like what you would call it would open into a cankered position, or like an inside where the skin on the inside of your mouth falls off.
More red, more global, not just the canker pinpoint, but the...
No, so you can have a mouthful of that. It's called thrush.
Yeah, I mean, there's thrush. I guess there are various types of things, and the most common would be thrush, actually.
And that's the same as a canker, but in a larger yeasty... breakdown.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, anytime you have a problem this way, now these, the leg bones connected to the knee bone.
Yeah.
Okay. If you've got thrush, then you need to look at the rectum. It always flows both ways. The same flora that will cause you to get a fever blister. that's why it's in the herpes run,
mm-hmm.
will show up in your butt as well.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes the disconnection is in the small intestine or mm-hmm. in the mid-level, lower, large intestine,
mm-hmm.
more so than in the mouth.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's just the symptom.
Correct.
So when you have that when that happens, you have an excess of a microbial something.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? A capsicum in pepper salts will do that too.
Mm-hmm.
But you can get to where you like that, but if you get it just right and hot enough, you'll know it the next day.
Mm-hmm.
You see? Because they're connected.
Yeah. That's true. So,
Anything's out of balance there, that's the causal symptom that your gut is telling you that you have an excess. We stopped right there. That's enough.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
It's an excess.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever's in excess, it's too much. That shows up to let you know that something is, and that's why your melanta and some of your kaolinite
mm-hmm.
becomes like when you overdose, they give you coal, you know, the
charcoal, yeah, charcoal. Activated charcoal, yeah.
Correct, and what that does is absorbs the excess.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
In the more virulent, violent, you know, opiates and aspirin overdoses and
right.
you know what I'm saying.
That very good.
Stuff.
Right, very good. Okay, we'll move.
Whoa. There's something else.
Yep.
Another thing that you do, you take a sour wood honey
mm-hmm.
and a pretty high acidic cider vinegar.
Oh, yeah.
When you have that balance, see, the sweet feeds it
uh-huh.
to draw it to it.
Uh-huh.
But then that pretty high, a little higher, like a canning vinegar that's a higher acidity.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And a cider vinegar that would be mixed together.
Mm-hmm.
That is the most soothing because the vinegar actually pickles and or balances that flora and fauna. It will correct that.
Right. Very good. Very good.
And that's natural, and it won't hurt you. And if you had 2 tablespoons or 2 gallons, it wouldn't make any difference.
Mhm. Yeah, I like the way you described how the honey sort of attracts the organisms, and then the acidity of the vinegar would
encapsulate it.
Very good.
Changes its pH.
Yeah. Right. Okay. I'm just. Tying up the curtains here, they're starting to attack the computers.
And also, you don't have to, some people would say just swish with that. If you had a basal thrush type breakout or breakdown,
mm-hmm.
but we say no, consume it.
Mm-hmm.
Hold a little under your tongue for a second, fine, but then consume it.
Right, because the problem is straight through the intestines, it's not just in the mouth.
Well, but see, that same circulation of how you make spit, that's where all that comes from anyway. That's how your sublingual medications work.
Mm-hmm.
Same way. So it is effective, but you need to go ahead and consume it because it helps balance the whole acidity process.
Yeah. And when you take an acidic cider vinegar, it's said that it will turn alkaline in the intestine. Is that the case?
Yes.
Okay.
Have to. Otherwise, if it didn't do that, you would never absorb free radical minerals.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we didn't say vitamins and nutrients. We said minerals.
Mm-hmm.
Minerals will not absorb in an acid. They break down. They don't absorb. But when they go alkaline, that's when they're absorbed.
Right, so they break down in the stomach in the acid, but then they have to be...
That's why your magnesium is so the end-all, wonderful, most fabulous thing ever.
Why?
Because it naturally does that. It takes it to alkalinity.
Mm-hmm. And other minerals don't naturally go out to...
Nope.
Ah. So tell me a little bit more of that. It's a bit of a digression here.
We have to stay on point.
No, we don't. I'm the creator. I just created a digression.
That was a little ball for Bob. Don't worry.
He liked it.
So now at the end of the day, see, he can have great dialogue with you that you're overrunning the thing and you're not staying on point and you're just going to bed. what fun. Okay, the magnesium, the actual balance of magnesium is not effective unless the body is in a certain degree of absorption.
Mm-hmm.
You understand that some people absorb easier and better than others. That cortisol is a good example of how you get out of balance and then you can't absorb, so it just holds everything as fat.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, same thing. Magnesium, you can't take magnesium and divide it and make it something else.
Mm-hmm.
Unlike folic acid, ester C, vitamin C, blah, 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 blah. See, those are different things, but the same basic element, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then some people can absorb ester C and others don't. Others can eat an orange, or actually what's 10,000 times better than that is a carrot.
Mm-hmm.
But nobody knows that or they don't get that for some reason. But regardless, or Celerac, that's also super to do that. If your magnesium is in a balanced position where it can cause the alkalinity of your small intestine to allow greater levels or degree of absorption, it's not as effective in what you call healthy folks that are kind of stressless, that eat well, and they're not super, super skinny like Bob, or super, super heavy like those that are morbidly obese.
Mm-hmm.
You see? Those don't have such, they can feel smaller snips of imbalance.
We're getting, I don't think I'm focused here, so I'm not getting the answer I want.
Okay,
magnesium, as all minerals, they go into the stomach, and then apparently they're all...
Now, hold on a second now. Not as all minerals, they're different.
Uh-huh.
They're different. Gold is a mineral.
Yeah.
And you can eat gold.
Yeah.
But that's not the same causal reaction as you get with magnesium.
Well, are minerals, for the most part, altered in the stomach by stomach acid? And
no.
Okay.
Minerals aren't. Vitamins are.
Hmm.
But minerals aren't.
Hmm.
The basic building blocks are not.
Well, I guess what I learned from chemistry is that minerals are a certain valence when they come in as a food or just as a supplement.
That's called compounding.
Uh-huh. So they would be compounded with something,
and then they become something else.
Like a magnesium citrate, and then the stomach acid has to break it down.
Well, it breaks it down, but you can have citrate of magnesium, and you're going to have a flood in the bowel.
Not, depending on the amount. I mean, that's more so with magnesium oxide.
Well, I understand, but you start looking at the basic ingredients of what you call Miralax.
Oh, yeah, but that's, I mean, they're talking about 2,000 and 3,000 milligrams.
Why, sure.
About a person taking 200 milligrams of magnesium citrate, and since most of the population is constipated, actually the laxative effect is appreciated. But anyway, so with a valence situation of a compounded mineral or mineral compound, don't most mineral compounds require some acidity in the stomach in order to break them down?
No, not if you have enough acid anyway. If you have if you have no digestive juices in your stomach, it doesn't matter what you're doing. You're not going to be long to your albumin is going to go through the roof, and your creatinine is going to drop through the bottom, and you're going into liver failure, and you'll be dead soon anyway. So you can't use that as your compounding, because that's becomes the litmus standard.
No, that none of that made sense in terms of if you have no digestive juices in your stomach, okay, yeah, you die. But if you've got some digestive juices, meaning hydrogastric acid,
yes.
Is the gastric acid being used to break down mineral compounds in your food or supplements?
No.
How do those minerals break down?
They don't break down. That's the point.
Uh-huh.
Now, it mixes and compounds with what else is in your stomach.
Yeah.
That's why if you have goods, that's why your food supplements that have these key mineral elements added are food-based. And then when you add the mineral, the food gets digested and compounded. It doesn't change the mineral. It changes the degree of stomach acid. Some foods create more acid, other foods create less acid. And the absorption level of those minerals passing through, the absorption happens in the intestine. If you broke those down, you can't break magnesium down into anything but magnesium.
Right.
You can add things to it, but you can't break it down. It doesn't become half. Minerals like that don't have a half-life.
Right.
Well, if it doesn't have a half-life, you can let it sit there till Jesus comes and it'd still be magnesium.
Right, yeah, that's why most of magnesium is laxative, because it doesn't break down. But
right.
I guess I'm intrigued by this point that the stomach acids don't break down mineral compounds.
They can.
Why not?
So, because they would be less than they'd be something else.
But if it's a magnesium citrate...
That's not magnesium.
No, I'm saying a mineral compound like a magnesium citrate.
Oh, I see. It, all it does, it divides the compounded element.
Yeah.
It'll divide the magnesium and the citrate, or that process that put the magnesium in the compound.
Right.
Like the old-timey coal tar. Now, that'll take you back to your school days. Compounding with coal tar.
Yeah.
If you digest that, all it does is take the tar out of your compounded element.
Right.
And that's what that acid does, and then it passes through the normal, natural way.
Okay, now another interesting point here is which foods make more acid and which foods create less. Can you give me a few of those?
Yes, absolutely. You got to have your starting place. Okay. Now, let me tell you the trick J.W. uses. He used to years ago, maybe it was from consuming large amounts of everything and or alcohol and tobacco and every other delicious, wonderful thing that life had to have to send him. Sometimes he would have what you call like that reflux or indigestion or too much acidity or something. And what he would do then is he would get a good... kosher dill pickle and Coca-Cola. He's not a big Coca-Cola fan, but straight Coca-Cola. And it doesn't have to be super cold either. The warmer the phosphorus is in that, it actually does the trick. And what that does is it balances that acid, heavy-duty indigestion, too much acid in his, you know, causing the reflux or, you know, causing those problems, those balance him back to a normal level. But you can test 1,000 people and their degree or level of acidity. It varies.
Of course, yeah.
Well, but now, of course, but some people are sensitive to salt.
Yeah, I know. I've talked to them. Right, yeah.
They can't stand it. I mean, they can't eat out in restaurants because... But the chefs who make things taste good by putting 2,000 milligrams of sodium in a mashed potato, they can't take because it's just too salty.
Right, right.
So they're at a different base level.
Right, right.
But here's that same person that if you leave the salt out, and even add the butter, which sometimes they're sensitive to, and then, say, like in a serving of mashed potatoes, put a half a teaspoon of fresh horseradish.
Mm-hmm.
It adds a saltiness or a flavor to the potato, gives it a brightness, and the horseradish naturally creates that pleasantness. It almost takes the sodium away that you didn't have, but it makes it digestible. The soothing effect of ginger ale when you're not feeling well. Back when they really put ginger in it.
Right.
That, and so you've got to, if you're going to say that or answer that question, you've got to balance it on everybody's pH in their stomach acidity being the same. You see, and that's in normal digestion. That's not in the folks with the gastral bypasses and those that have had the bowel resections. When you start ripping out the stuff and putting stuff around, then everything changes.
Right. So is that by way of telling me you can't give me a list of foods that make you more acid or less acid?
No, darling. We're just saying you got to say that that list that you're fixing to get is based on the norm.
The norm, not the individual sensitivity.
Not the compromised or super sensitive.
Right, okay,
now,
perfect.
Ask your question now. You asked for two different kinds of food. Ask it again specifically.
Which are foods that can make a normal acid pH person more acidic?
Okay, beets.
Oh, okay.
Wheat germ. Rye. Hops. You notice we're kind of describing beer here. But, you know.
Not really.
Well, but you know what I'm saying. It's the same process. Cauliflower. Some, the broccolini, not broccoli, but the broccolini. Now, and see, we're not just saying greens, but broccolini is a little bit different.
Is that like the leaves?
It's a cross between broccoli and like asparagus.
Oh, don't know that.
It's long and it's slender and it has some tiny little florets, not like broccoli, it's broccolini.
Okay,
are you ready?
Yeah.
Star anise. Black... we want to say cohosh, but we think that there's a, we think you have to do something with the black cohosh.
Well, that's a Chinese herb.
Well, maybe if you make a tea out of it.
Sure, that would be a tea, okay.
So that'll do it.
Okay.
It'll energize it. Because what you're asking is not, you're asking which things make your stomach make more acid.
Correct. Yes.
That's what you're asking.
Yeah.
Okay. Highly rubs on meat. It's all right. Rub, make him, tell him you'll have to get his wooden spoon.
Get your wooden spoon, bud. Rubbing what on meat, sorry, Ion?
Rubs. It's all right, baby. Rubs. Like a dry rub on a meat.
I don't know what that is.
Okay, then just write it down. You'll have to look it up. But
rubbed meat. Okay, got it.
No, dry rub.
Oh.
A dry rub. It's a seasonings that you rub on meat before you barbecue them.
Oh, okay.
Memphis barbecue is famous for dry rub.
Okay.
On a brisket, on ribs, on pig, on stuff. That dry rub will do it. Now, that tender, it's a tenderizer.
I'm going to have to thaw that piece of meat for dinner, Bob.
Also that runs you all the way into your tenderizers, which are very acidic, and that would be papaya. One of the few fruits.
Right. Interesting. Well, that's an enzymatic fruit, but it also helps stimulate stomach acid.
It absolutely does.
Wow.
Now, the lycopene... And some people say tomatoes would have to be on that list, but no, not at all.
Mm-hmm.
The lycopene in tomatoes actually tempers acid, but you can get a sauce, like a spaghetti sauce, with all the other things when you start mixing the basil and the garlic and the other aspects to it,
mm-hmm.
and you cook it off, that'll activate the lycopene. Instead of being a balancer, it actually becomes a more stimulant
mm-hmm.
of acid.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And see, if you pack your gut full of pasta and increase the acid, that's when you get too much the Italian indigestion, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Same thing is true in the Italian sausages. It's not the sausage, it's the Italian seasoning and herbs that are activated in that combination.
Yes, yes, yeah.
Coffee.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's specifically regular coffee and up to espressos.
Mm-hmm.
But not the double lattes and not, you know, all the other mixtures of stuff. That's
okay.
It. But just mm-hmm. the oil of the coffee bean at regular good stout coffee forward.
Mm-hmm.
Increases that pH of it, changes it to acid.
Right.
Let's see. Wait a minute. Did we get the star fruit?
Star anise, yeah.
No.
Star fruit. Oh.
Fruit that's. It's the same shape of flower.
Yeah, we've had
that.
Mm-hmm. Now, our. It's seaweed, yeah.
Kiwi. If seaweed does not.
So is it that in the stomach, the direct action of the food turns acidic, or is it turning on mechanisms that create the stomach acid production?
Correct, because otherwise you could overload it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It only does, it stimulates the stomach acid. That's why we have that clarification.
Yeah, very nice. Okay.
That's what stimulates it.
Good. Okay. Do you want to move to what foods calm down an acidic stomach?
Yeast.
But first of all, before even going there, what we think in natural medicine is that not a lot of people really do have increased stomach acid. It tends to be more fermentation and actual alkalinity or backup of contents of small intestine. Is that true?
No, it's not the end all. I mean, it can be the experience,
mm-hmm.
but no.
Mm-hmm. So some
otherwise,
people.
Otherwise, how would your spleen interact in that whole process? It takes care of the whole endocrinological system.
Well, I mean, sometimes it doesn't. You have so many people with digestive problems that are...
But that's from their disconnection of not understanding eating what they crave.
Uh-huh.
If you followed your craving, you'd never have a digestion problem. Period.
So that's interesting. Now we're jumping then. I'll just take the note on indigestion is a disconnection of not following your cravings.
Yes, but here's the most critical point of all of this, and it's probably the main topic.
Mm-hmm.
And this is very critical that you need to get it exactly word for word.
Mm-hmm.
Always remember that indigestion is better and no digestion at all.
So bless what you've got and stop complaining.
And in the olden days, if you ate something that made you sick,
mm-hmm.
let's say when the turnip greens come in,
uh-huh.
and you eat so many they make you sick,
uh-huh.
go right back and eat them again in the same quantity. And see, indeed, if that's what it was that made you sick.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
Now, that's old-timey. But what will happen is what happens is when you eat something that disagrees with you,
mm-hmm.
then by eating it, that disagreement causes a balance. Otherwise, there wouldn't be the radical disagreement.
Wow.
And if you go right back then and eat it that same thing again and better, out of the same pot, but even better,
yeah.
Then it'll actually have a different causal effect.
Yeah.
You understand that the way your digestion works, take a soda cracker. Now, we're not jumping off track. This is what you're asking.
Right.
You take a soda cracker, a saltine.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That means a soda cracker that has salt on both sides. Bob, those are the things you should get to put your peanut butter on. It'll change your life. Take a soda cracker and put it in your mouth, the whole cracker.
Uh-huh.
And you just keep your mouth closed and chew it.
Uh-huh.
And chew, 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 chew. Don't swallow, just chew, chew, chew. After a very little while, that soda cracker will become sweet.
Yes, 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 yes.
Well, that's where your acid discharge balance starts taking place is in your saliva.
Correct. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But you can change the pH of your stomach from your saliva.
Right. Yeah. Mhm.
If you get something really, really hot, or get something really, really cold, or why does ice cream sort of sometimes make you gassy? But it starts from your mouth because you want to melt the ice cream. You don't swallow the chunks of frozen ice cream.
Mm-hmm.
You see? Mm-hmm. And that change of the compound releases that super amount of fermentation, as you'd call it, with the lactase.
Right. And the sugars,
that, yeah. Yes, that can make you be like a still and
mm-hmm.
make gassy.
Uh-huh.
Or certain... Or as we say, larger degree of flatulence.
Yes. Okay. Well, that is, that's all very wonderful.
Do you want the foods that make
less
acid?
Yes, please.
Okay. Semolina flour. Beef,
mm-hmm.
not chicken, beef. Bouillon.
Mm-hmm.
Goose liver pate.
Mm-hmm.
Foie gras.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that the same thing, or?
No.
Whose grass is the foie?
That's just the liver of the goose.
Oh, okay. So there's a pate of it and just this, okay.
Yes.
Okay.
One has the blood and one is just the liver.
Oh, okay.
Foie gras is just the liver.
Yeah.
Goose liver pate has the blood.
Okay.
Of the goose.
Very exciting.
And good because of those proteins.
Mm-hmm.
Blood.
Mm-hmm. Blood pudding or just blood?
Just blood.
Okay.
You ever had blood sausage?
I can't remember.
Well... That does that blood, then that in blood. I mean, in like, if you ever had a good tartare.
Oh, of course, yeah. I like rare things, so yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well, but I mean, even now, but that's all part of it. But it's actually blood.
Mm-hmm.
Let's wait a second. Lowers. Butternut squash.
Oh, right. Okay.
Fennel. Fennel. That's what it is. I keep seeing the thing of the green stalks with the root.
Yeah.
Slice the root. I keep thinking, what do you call it? And it's fennel.
Yeah, nice.
The green fronds
mm-hmm.
are great to smoke things and groblocks.
Oh.
Curing process.
Oh, right.
That lowers. But now salmon does not,
mm-hmm.
but groblocks does.
Mm-hmm.
But see, it's the fennel and the sugar and the salt curing process.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what does it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
nice.
Salt.
Yeah.
White pepper.
Ah. Mm-hmm. What's white pepper?
Ground peppercorns that are white.
Wow. Are they albino peppercorns? Where'd they come from?
No, they're different because the black peppercorns are wood.
Mm.
They're not good for you. White pepper is an herb.
Ah. Yes. Yeah, I don't like black. Interesting. They're wood. Oh.
Well, that's what peppercorns are, is wood.
Yeah. Shoot.
Okay, and cloves.
Mm-hmm.
And varying degrees of allspice.
Mm-hmm. And why? How do you say it, varying degrees?
Well, you go to Jamaica and you get a five spice. That's a single thing.
Uh-huh.
You go to China and you get five spice, and that's five different herbs mixed together.
Yeah.
Allspice is not one thing.
Yeah, gotcha.
You see?
Yep.
Because, you know, it's just like, it'd be like saying pumpkin pie spice. Well, that's just a mixture of nutmeg and cloves and cinnamon and blah, 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 blah.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just as a combination, you see,
mm-hmm.
So any one of those would. Okay, you're going to love this one. Quail eggs.
Oh, okay.
Early days, pregnancies, if you could find good fresh quail eggs,
mm-hmm.
they would just absolutely crave them forever.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Because it would lower that acidity.
Wow.
You know how mamas get hot and everything gives them indigestion?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Because they're increasing, so it just...
Right.
Their system is supercharged.
Mm-hmm.
That is not like regular eggs, though, because, see, the albumin's too much.
Right.
But quail eggs are just almost perfect food.
Right.
Regular honey.
Mm-hmm.
Even the processed stuff that has not much value.
Mm-hmm.
Blackstrap molasses.
Mm-hmm.
Gotta be blackstrap molasses, not molasses.
Right.
They have a huge mineral aspect of blackstrap molasses that does indeed lower.
Now, maybe I should be asking you, how does a person know if they have too much acid or not enough acid?
Well, you can't even tell.
No.
But the individual.
No.
Okay. Italians build a regular normalcy in their diet. They'll have a heightened degree of acidity just because of all that semolina they're digesting.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Chinese people eat more hot.
Mm-hmm.
Because they eat so much raw and not cooked down.
Mm-hmm.
The capsicum levels help keep their place to digest.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, then you go to your place where they eat a lot of fish and fowl and fresh and that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You seem to sometimes go to a more denserness. Because you'd say the Hawaiians would have to be very healthy, but you look at them and they're not.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the young straps are, but most people 18 years old running around chasing girls, they're in pretty good shape anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you see what I'm saying? But if you look at that society, not so much.
Well, there's no standard dish over here, so you can't... I mean, Italians eat a certain way, Chinese eat a certain way, but... You know, it's very rare to have a whole culture eating the same way. But anyway, with the...
The Moans eat the same way.
Right. So how do you... I know every culture is a bit different in their acidity or not, but how does one tell if... Because as I understand it, the symptoms of acidity in the stomach are very similar to the symptoms of high alkalinity in the stomach.
Yes. You follow your... here's how you deal with it. You follow your cravings.
Oh, mm-hmm.
You follow your cravings. And
uh-huh.
If you're getting too much of something, you'll crave something else.
Uh-huh.
You see? And if you'll follow that, then you'll be fine.
Uh-huh.
And if you don't, then you'll build from that level of increasing the norm till it gets running hotter.
Mm-hmm.
Or... decreasing the norm until you need less.
Mm-hmm.
You see? Because you crave yourself right into obesity.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the things that you eat rather than the things that you crave will fill your belly but won't satisfy your hunger.
So if you follow your cravings, you mean not necessarily follow and go ahead and eat all your cravings?
Absolutely. Eat only your cravings.
But then you can crave yourself right into obesity.
No, you can't.
That's what you said. You crave yourself right into obesity.
You can crave yourself if you eat things that you aren't craving. If you're hungry and you want a Snicker bar, okay, you're craving a Snicker bar.
Yeah.
And you don't have a Snicker bar. You have something to eat.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe, but you can't have a Snicker bar because that's out of the picture.
Right.
And then you eat a peanut butter sandwich, and then that doesn't work, and then you eat a banana, and then that doesn't work. And then you eat some ice cream, and then that
yeah.
doesn't work. And then you get a blueberry muffin, and then that doesn't do it. And then you have a digestive biscuit with some tea, and then that doesn't do it. But you just consumed 3,000 calories when you could have just had a 600-calorie Snicker bar and done it.
Got it. Yeah.
I'm sorry, we weren't clear. But if you follow your cravings,
mm-hmm.
then one Snicker bar will do it.
Got it. Very good. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And if you do that, chocolate cake is the most blessed thing God ever created, you creator, you,
mm-hmm.
that's ever been created in the world. But you don't have to have a whole one.
Mm-hmm.
And if you could have a piece anytime you wanted it, it wouldn't be like the last chocolate cake you're ever going to have in your life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very
good. That's like when you go to the desert, everything you eat, you can gain weight.
Yeah.
Because your body thinks it's going to the desert, so everything you take in is going to save.
Right.
But if you're having good nutrition, it's like, I don't need this. I can let this go because I always get good nutrition.
Mm-hmm.
Boom. I always get good nutrition. Boom. And then you can increase your caloric intake. You're eating 5,000 calories a day in your size.
Perfect, perfect. Now, it struck me that I should ask Ion a little bit about irritable bowel syndrome because Chris...
Okay.
And I are doing the IB Irritable Bowel Syndrome for Dummies cookbook right now. So can we move to irritable bowel syndrome and talk about that?
Okay. Give me what you call your definition of irritable bowel syndrome other than the obvious.
Where people's digestion kind of backfires on them. They start getting either constipation or diarrhea or pain or bloating and gas, and they really don't know what's going on.
Wow. Isn't that the same thing that happens to your corpses?
Hmm. The gas and bloating.
And their systems turn loose?
I don't know. Tell me more.
No, we just asked the question. We were trying to draw this wonderful parallel of being dead, and the same thing happens to those folks that's happened to your IBS for Dummies. But now, do you have two different sets? Is there IBS for intelligence also? Or do they get it?
Yeah, well,
get it?
Yes, I don't know. No, this is just for the dummy ones.
Oh, then we'll do, and then that's the aspect of what you're going to get.
Yeah, and
the
bright ones are just going to ignore it all anyway.
Okay, very good. IBS is a uncontrollable urge, an uncontrollable urge to control.
Mm-hmm.
And what that means is every single one, not some, not most, but all, who find themselves in a position of IBS, they now have lost control of their life.
Mm.
And when they lose control of their life, it shows up in this way. They either have the dysentery, the scours, the runs,
mm-hmm.
or they block. And then all of a sudden have all these abdominal, you can't even say it, why would you want to address it?
Mm-hmm.
Cramps and
mm-hmm.
and shooting pains and distension,
mm-hmm.
you know, because the distension is painful in itself,
mm-hmm.
right? Compaction, you know, you can just keep going in that process. And it comes into a place to where they can't function in everyday society because they've also lost control of everyday society.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So they can't go to the store or go for a walk or go enjoy an amusement park because it may kick in and then they're done.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have to be debilitating, and most of the time it isn't. But if you get the scours, you get what they call a 24-hour bug,
mm-hmm.
you're not going out to go swimming.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I mean?
Yeah.
And so if you get something in your life, stress, that whole systemic lack of control.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the ones that are going to have IBS for dummies.
Hmm. Very good.
And when that comes into easy and balanced, then guess what? Their symptoms go away as quickly as your early onset position. Isn't it interesting in your IBS for dummies? They normally start one way and they don't go back and forth.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Once they have the runs, they just have loose bowels all the time.
It seems so, yeah.
And
yeah.
Once they're constipated, they don't get the runs. It don't matter if you really pump them full of citrus of magnesium.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you get enough of that and it'll make so much water that you'll go. But sometimes that doesn't even have an effect on them.
Right.
And they don't run both. They don't run hot, cold, hot, cold, hot, cold, cold, hot.
Right. Now, in a book like this, is there something that Ion could help me kind of poke into the book that would be the way you treat it? You know, where...
Sure. That's
yeah.
easy. You tell them what the problem is.
Mm-hmm.
Tell them what the problem is. Tell them how to catch it.
Mm-hmm.
Teach them how to catch IBS.
Mm-hmm.
Lay it down. Get in a bad marital relationship. Get into a point where you're not loved and appreciated because you stop loving and appreciating yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Find yourself eliminated and cut off from every joy and participation that you look forward to.
Mm-hmm.
Cut yourself off from your joy.
Mm-hmm.
And then... it won't matter, make any difference what you cook in this cookbook. It won't matter.
Yeah.
It won't help you.
Yeah.
You teach people how to catch irritable bowel syndrome,
uh-huh.
they'd never have it.
Mm-hmm.
You can use the words just like that if you want.
Mm-hmm. That'd be interesting to see if it gets by the cutting room floor.
Well, and get IBS just right, and it'll hit the floor sooner or later anyway.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, I think I'll be able to work something in. That's good.